and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us today. Well, today on the show, we are going to talk a little about boron, but as always, we would love to take your phone call and talk about anything going on in your farm. Our phone number here is 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. You can email us, radio@agphd.com, or send us a note on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Darren Hefty, or Brian Hefty. All right, we're going to get to the AgPhD mailbag right away during the show today, I think. Before we do, I'll just give you a couple of quick comments just to kind of cue up the boron thing that we'll talk about throughout the show today. Yes, it's a micronutrient, but here are a couple reasons why I think you need to be doing something about boron probably every year on your farm. Number one, boron's leachable, so it doesn't stick around forever. Now, granted, it's not nearly as leachable as nitrate, and from what we've been able to figure out, not even as leachable as sulfate, but still, you can lose some. So if you never fertilize with boron, it probably means your soils are going to be deficient, which means your plants are going to be deficient. Here's the reason number two why you need to do something about this is boron's incredibly important in the plant, especially around the flowering time. And I'll just give you one little thing. If you look at your corn ears, and a lot of people will say, well, it didn't fill out all the way to the end because maybe I was, whatever, short on moisture, short on nitrogen, short on something. Well, that shortage in a lot of cases is actually boron. So if your corn ear is not filling out all the way to the end, I would check real hard on what your soil test levels are, and I'm usually looking for 3 parts per million or so, and what your plant tissue analysis levels are, and then go from there. Because all I'm saying is boron is needed in the plant. Yeah, you don't need much of it. I mean, to get to 3 parts per million doesn't cost hardly anything. Okay, it's not like we're talking about putting 200 pounds on like nitrogen. So you only need a little bit of boron. But if you don't have that little bit of boron, you absolutely can be hurting your yield. All right, let's get to the Ag PhD mailbag.
It's the mailbag!
All right, first question comes from Pakistan, and we were talking about fixing saline soils, Brian. And one of our viewers said, I've got this problem in my land. We're farming about 5,000 acres in Pakistan. What would you suggest as we're starting to deal with these saline soils? Is soil testing my first spot? Where do I go?
Yes, you want to actually make sure that you have a saline issue. I mean, assuming that your soil test proves that you do have the saline issue.
All right, so what do you need to see on the soil test?
Well, just a high level of salt. I mean, that's really all it is. Saline is high salt. When we talk about sodic soils, that's high sodium. And it's two totally different things. And I realize it may sound the same.
You need to see the salt. What about the pH? You need to see a higher pH as well?
Well, okay. There are certain factors that lead into it. Yes, it's electrical conductivity. It's soil pH. I mean, a number of things. But basically, just let's keep this super crazy simple. If you have high salt levels in your soil, it's a saline soil. If you have high sodium levels in the soil, you should turn that into a salt, and then it's leachable. If you've already got high salt, that's the saline soil we're talking about. This is an easy problem to take care of. You got to put drain tile in and get it to flush out because your problem is poor drainage. So I was just over in India in September and just driving around, that's what I saw a lot of. Now, granted, they called this year a big monsoon year. They had tremendous amounts of rainfall compared to what they normally do. So even their desert looked like it looked like an oasis to me. But all I'm saying is when you've got heavy soil, you don't the soil doesn't allow those salts to go down through very well. And so the two things I'm looking for are number one, drain tile. Number two, it's calcium content in that soil. A lot of times in these real heavy soils, we have high magnesium, and the high magnesium helps bind things up. It makes that ground really tight and poorly drained. So if you just get a little more calcium out there in relation to your magnesium, you'll find a little bit better permeability through your soil. Now those salts will start to flush away naturally with the rainfall that you get. But again, if you have a very extreme drainage problem, you could always put some tile in. So those are the two things that we always look at here in the United States.
All right, Brian, speaking about drainage, here is another question for you. This one, the question is, how do you drain your terraces without inlets?
Okay, so first of all, we talk about not having inlets out there. And the reason why is so we don't get dirt, chemical, and fertilizer down into our tile lines. All right. Now, if you've got, let's call it a pothole or a terrace where you know water's going to be ponding up, then what I would suggest is putting a whole bunch of tile lines close together and very shallow. Normally, we like seeing tile in the range of 3 feet to 5 feet deep. Okay, I like 3 feet in our drier climates, 4 or 5 feet more in the wetter climates of, let's call it, Illinois, Ohio, as you get 40, 50 inches of rain plus. Okay, anyway, what I would suggest then is going at about, let's call it, 2 feet. Just keep those lines really shallow and put them close together, maybe every 10, 15 feet in these areas. And I realize as soon as you hear this, you're like, oh my gosh, Brian, what do you want me to spend? It's only a little area, a little pothole or a little terrace. It's no big deal. We're not talking about lots of money in total. Yes, we're going to spend lots of money on just a handful of acres, but it's no big deal. If you got your own tile plow, I mean, tile's cheap. So just throw a few more lines in, put them in pretty shallow, and that usually works pretty well. Now, certainly it's not going to get rid of the water as fast as an inlet, but this is going to protect your tile lines better, and it's going to protect the environment a little bit better. Now, here's the other thing. You can certainly use inlets if you're going somewhere else in the field or into a wetland or something like that, rather than just right into the creek. If you're going right into the creek, absolutely don't put inlets in. But if you've got somewhere else that it's going, so it's not getting right to the creek, then yeah, inlets are fine. Like on our farm, for example, we've got some watershed dams, so basically wetlands that things go into. And before they even get there, a lot of times we dump the tile lines into grass waterways. So it's going to go down the grass waterway. Then it's going to sit in this basically watershed dam for a while. And so to think that there's anything dirty getting out of that, the odds would be pretty slim. So anyway, all depends on your situation.
Going to be talking about nutrients on our show today. Specifically, we're going to feature boron. We're also taking your calls and agronomic questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. Stay tuned.
Using N-Serve nitrogen stabilizer with fall fertilizer applications keeps nitrogen available into the spring for maximum crop growth. Field trials in Iowa show N-Serve delivered an average revenue increase of $22.96 per acre, and N-Serve is the only recognized nitrogen stabilizer product in the Iowa Nutrient Reduction Strategy because it reduces nitrate leaching. That's max profit in an environmentally sustainable way. Calculate your field's profit potential at nitrogenmaximizers.com.
We plant corn in Iowa, spray soybeans in Illinois.
We pull calves in Kansas, farrow hogs in Minnesota.
We raise rice in Arkansas, rye in Canada, and wheat everywhere in between.
We farm millions of acres across North America
and build every piece of Case IH equipment.
Built by farmers for farmers. Case IH. Rethink productivity.
Bean growers continue to see yield loss from white mold across the Midwest this season. To maximize next year's crop, a white mold prevention strategy that includes Contans WG soil fungicide is a must for your farming operation. Applying Contans this fall to reduce the sclerotia in the soil is the most effective way to stop white mold at its source. Start a Contans white mold control strategy this fall or pay for it later in lost yield.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, marestail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. I'm excited today. We're going to be talking about boron. It's a misunderstood nutrient. I know at the Ag PhD field day, there was so much chatter about, wow, did you see what the guys are doing with boron? And now Randy Doughty broke the world record on soybeans, and he was one of those guys leading the charge saying, man, we need more boron out there. Hey, for 190 bushel soybeans, you definitely need more of everything. We'll hear from Randy a little bit later in the show. But let's head down to Nebraska. I got Joe Sisco with us right now with Midwest Labs. Joe, are most farmers even testing for boron?
I would say not. I mean, it's a 50-50 chance if you see a sample come in with boron on it.
I think that's pretty close guess. I'd say the same here because we get tests all the time from growers really all over the place. And, yeah, a lot of them don't even have it on there. And I can see why you'd be all excited when somebody says, hey, I'm using some boron and, oh, man, I'm not even testing. That gets me more excited. How about the guys that are testing? Are you seeing it being short on most of those tests?
I'm seeing it short because, let's face it, we're in a corn-soybean rotation. And in the past, we've had alfalfa in there. Anytime a person was addressing their alfalfa needs, they were putting boron in the program. And so now we've gone a few years with just corn-soybeans. We've been focusing on the macros and the micro, N, P, and K, sulfur, and zinc. And now I think it's boron's time.
Yeah, I think you're right on the money there.
Boron.
You know, when you look at that, I see certain micronutrients getting a focus in different crops, like zinc, for example, on corn. Well, we need zinc with every crop that we raise, but a lot of farmers I talk to, I put zinc on when I do corn, and I say, what about the rest of your rotation? Well, hopefully there's some left from the corn because I'm not. And so boron, like you mentioned, alfalfa is really responsive, but we get good responses when we think about how that boron gets used in plants. It's important in all of these crops.
Oh, yeah. It's really important because the first thing I'll look at is my soil test levels on the boron. If I'm in that medium to high range, 1.1 to 2 for parts per million of boron, then I'm probably sufficient for my average yield. But if I'm chasing some higher yields, some corn grower contest yields, I'm definitely looking at supplementing that soil. And whether it be a 2x2 or a broadcast or even a foliar, I want to know, one, is my crop getting what it needs? So in season, I'll do some plant tissue samples at V6, V8, V10, pre-tassel and tassel at least one season, and then adjust my needs the next year. And we're seeing boron show up in a lot of tissue samples and as a deficiency. And I think these higher yields, where even though our soil levels might be right on, we need to address them in season. And that can be arranged in a number of ways.
Yeah, that's exactly right. With our high yields that we're getting anymore, we're using so much more nutrition out there in fields, and little things, seemingly little things like boron, have definitely gone unnoticed. Joe, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on. I know you're super busy this time of year with so many soil samples getting done around the country. Really appreciate having you.
Thank you.
You bet. Let's head out to Maine right now. We got our friend Alan Perry with us. Alan, how are you doing?
Hey, we're doing great. Thanks.
All right, we're talking boron today, and I love Joe kind of kicking this off saying, you know, we're getting higher yields, guys are changing up their rotations, and some guys just aren't getting boron on like they should, that we're seeing shortages. Are you seeing the same thing in your neck of the woods?
Yes, and I would say there's a couple of things that we always tell our growers first. Number one, if you're farming east of the Mississippi River, you're much more susceptible to boron deficiency because boron's water soluble. And with the high rainfall on the east half of the United States, then you lose that boron. So even though you're putting some on, we're not very efficient with it. It gets away from us. And west of the Mississippi River, if you get to California, that's where the boron mine is, the desert areas, the drier parts of the country. They don't lose it, so a little different strategy when you're working there. But calcium is your buffer. If your the better your calcium levels are, the closer to excellent, the more immune you are to any kind of issues with boron toxicity. So those are the first two things we look at.
That's very interesting because I know a lot of farmers that we talk to that say, I don't know, I've never seen this toxicity, but to the man, I would say pretty high calcium levels. So you're right. That's a good thing to take a look at on your test. Okay.
So and if you have low calcium at the same time, don't be too aggressive with the boron until you fix the calcium. That's all.
Okay. You just got to have your priorities. So what is your goal on soil tests? What do you like to see for levels for boron for high yield producers?
Well, we kind of break our system into parts because where you are is the reality that we start with, not where you wished you were. 0.8 minimum, below 0.8, we start to see lots of economic symptoms that we don't want, hollow heart and potatoes, hollow stem and broccoli, that kind of thing. But 1.5 to 2.0 is kind of our excellent range. But it takes more boron to get from 1 to 1.5 than you might imagine. It takes a little while, and you have to kind of work at it.
Okay. Now, one thing that we've noticed on our farm, too, when we've got better levels of organic matter or better levels of humus, it seems like we can hold that boron a little better. Do you notice that also?
I think so, and I would kind of say that that organic matter really is the catalyst for more microbial activity, and the microbes are probably hanging on to the boron for you. Think of boron as kind of the forklift in the warehouse. You don't ship a forklift with every truckload of produce you ship out the door. You keep the forklift to use again later. And so if it doesn't get away, you can be fairly efficient with boron when your levels get to where they belong with some help from your microbes. But it is water soluble, so if it's not in a microbe form, then it might get away from you. So we're probably pretty aggressive during the year with putting some on once we fix our calcium levels, and then we read the crop, learn how to see what the symptoms are of enough. If you're in a cornfield, there should be a kernel of corn on the tip of every cob. If you don't have kernels out there on the end, that's a boron deficiency. So you can learn to look at things to say, I've put a lot on, but my crop's telling me we're not too much yet.
I'm going to ask, we've got Randy Dowdy, one of the two farmers that I know that raise above 500 bushel corn, and just chat with him about that on the corn ear, because I know he's made comments along those same lines too. But you mentioned during the year, reading the crop. So you're mainly doing tissue sampling, but also making visual observations?
Yes, and some sort of a crop history. If I know that I'm getting hollow heart in my potatoes, that's a classic symptom of boron deficiency. Hollow stem in broccoli. Now, it might be a little too late to fix that crop, but you should have that in the back of your mind to say, we have been deficient in the past, even though we've done X, Y, Z, and so how can we be more aggressive there to fix that? But we go look at calcium first. The key to boron, though, the other thing that goes with it is potassium. And boron makes potassium more efficient. So if we're putting a lot of potassium on, if you don't put the boron with it, you kind of lose the benefit of some of the potassium as well. So yields are down.
Interesting. Yeah, I like that, how all these nutrients are interrelated. And yeah, like you mentioned with potassium, that's a good thing to add to the discussion a little bit, is that boron's making that potassium more efficient. Okay, so timing-wise, I like to get micronutrients on early in the season. I just think they're so key in so much of the process, or so many of the processes that are going on in the plants. Boron seems to be a little different, seems to be one of those building blocks. You need a little bit all the way through the season. Do you have a timing that you say, man, we got to have the boron right by this time?
The timing that I look at is more weather sensitive than anything else. For example, I could say in northern Maine right this fall, we're boron deficient on our soil test. We know we've got to put some on. So we could go put that on this fall with, say, some fall applied potassium. But all our winter snowfall and the spring melt will probably eliminate that boron before I can get it in the plant.
Gotcha.
So I probably wouldn't do it, even though I might like to on a soil test. So we kind of look at weather issues. Even in the summer, I wouldn't put it on the day before it's going to rain an inch. I'd wait till after. So we're somewhat weather sensitive that way.
That's a great tip to watch the weather on these boron apps. Been talking with Alan Perry up in Maine. Alan, thank you so much. Really appreciate all the info. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
What if surviving a drought began with a microbe? What if instead of 10 buyers, you could access 10,000? What if you were paid for the carbon your crops pulled from the air? And what if these what-ifs weren't what-ifs at all? At Indigo, we're working with farmers to question the entire agriculture system, to reimagine everything from soil to sale. Yep, the whole lot. Visit indigoag.com/questions to find out more. Indigo, from questions we grow.
Clean fields and higher yields start with a strong battle plan. For soybean growers, there's no stronger ally than Sonic herbicide. When applied pre-emerge, Sonic has proven to defeat yield robbers like water hemp, mare's tail, and giant ragweed. With long-lasting residual control, it keeps fighting to defend your field from invaders. Visit battleweeds.com to plan your attack against weeds. Always read and follow label directions.
Sir, yes, sir!
How do you know when to run your grain bin fans? There's an app for that. With the Steps GMS app, you can manually turn your fans on and off from your smartphone. You can also configure the Steps GMS app to automatically turn fans on when the humidity or temperature is ideal to keep your grain in top quality condition. Save yourself some time and take the guesswork out of managing your stored grain with the Steps GMS app. Contact us at stepsgms.com for more information.
No one has to explain stress to a farmer. That's like explaining a missed forecast to a weatherman. Now, Mother Nature stresses soybeans the way markets, bankers, and politics can stress you. But there's a proven way to reduce stress. With Preaxor fungicide, you'll see the difference. It decreases stress from disease, drought, hail, and heat, so your beans can focus on what matters most, better yields. Talk to your local rep about Preaxor fungicide and BASF Plant Health. Always read and follow label directions.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, mare's tail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
As your corn crop grows and the ear begins to form, potassium is at a high demand, almost as high as nitrogen. The same is true for soybeans, with similar high demands of potassium during pod fill. Don't fall behind. Ensure your crop is getting its potassium with Catalyst. Catalyst by Actagrow has been shown to be the best at entering the leaf when compared to other leading potassium products. Visit k-supercharged.com for more information.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. Our topic is a micronutrient that's getting a lot of attention. It's boron. And at the Ag PhD Field Day this year, there's a lot of buzz about boron, and some of it was starting from the tent that had Randy Doughty speaking in. So we brought Randy on today to discuss this just a little bit more. Randy, thank you so much for joining us today.
Good morning. My good pleasure.
When we're talking about boron, I know at the field day, this is one of the things that growers are picking up out of your presentation, that boron was a key nutrient. Now, certainly we need the N, P, and K to be there at the right time, in the right place, at the right rate. How does this apply with boron as far as getting it out there at the right time? And just curious what the right time is to start with.
Well, you know, everybody is focused on N, P, and K forever. And I say all nutrients are important. You have to go back to the law of the minimum. You know, yield is limited by whichever nutrient is deficient or the most limiting, no matter what nutrient it is. So we try to be cognizant of all of them. We look at tissue samples in our data set just to understand where we need to be and what we think we need to be for the yields that we covet. And boron is getting a lot of attention. People say, well, okay, well, how much do I need to put on? And part of the problem that I find is that, you know, there's a lot of, you know, speculation as to what it takes. It's the most leachable nutrient that we deal with. So applying it in the fall like you do nitrogen or applying all of it pre-plant, probably not going to do you the good that you hope full season by applying it one time. So that's a problem. So I think that's a strategy that you can say, okay, I'm going to check the box hopefully early with some dry boron, but just understand, based off my experience, you're going to have to continue to put out boron throughout the season if you're going to check that box throughout the year.
All right, Randy. So here's the tough question for you. You set the world record again for soybeans this year, over 190 bushel soybeans. Clearly, there's a nutrient demand there. So talk to us about soybeans. I know at the field day, you were talking about putting multiple applications of boron out. This is something new for most growers. Let's say that I'm in the 70 bushel soybean range, which honestly, that's where we are on most of our farm. Am I going to do the same thing, just with lower rates than what you're doing at 190?
Man, we have to go back to tissue samples. I mean, it doesn't matter what we apply. It matters what gets in the plant. And to do that, I mean, nobody can look at the soil and tell what's in it by looking at it. Nobody can tell what's in the plant by looking at it. You can just say, I put some out and I hope. I'm not a hoper. I like to kind of know what we're doing and whether or not it's getting into the plant and how long it lasts and how long does it take to get into the plant, et cetera. So for everybody who wants to just take the easy button and say, I applied boron and then that's problem solved, it doesn't work that way. I wish it did. You know, I have used a lot of different products. People in Next Level are using a lot of different products. They all do not move the needle the same way. I mean, all don't last the same, you know, from one product to the next. They're not all created equal. So, you know, you're going to have to pull tissue samples, and you need to let that guide you. It may last 10 days, 2 weeks with a folding application. Some may last 3 weeks. Some may not move the needle at all. So it depends on your source and the product that you're buying. And, you know, you're going to have to pull tissue samples to see where you need to be and to see where you are, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it sure does. Keeping track of where those nutrient levels are at throughout the season is important. I think for any of our listeners today, one of the things that we stress is if you haven't done this before, you really haven't taken your soil testing program up a notch and you haven't done the plant tissue analysis, it doesn't have to cost you an arm and a leg. Pick a couple of spots out in one of your fields this year. Pull soil samples, mark where that spot was at, either with GPS or just put a flag out there if you want, and then come back in that general area and do some tissue sampling. And you can see, well, okay, what does the soil test tell me? And then what are my plants telling me that I'm actually getting in? I think that's a great tip you've got, Randy. Now, when it comes to placement, with a lot of these nutrients, we're putting them on in multiple different places. So for us, we do a lot of strip till, and so we're doing some banding right where we're going to be planting, and then we may do some foliar or some side dress later. When it comes to boron, do you like to put a little bit out in your 2x2, or do you like to? Would you like to see some out in that strip till band as well to start the year off?
Well, you guys have been playing around with that strip till for 2 or 3 years. I think you've been broadcasting quite a bit of boron, but obviously putting it in the root zone is where it's at. I mean, you think about a soybean plant, how big are the roots? And, you know, we plant them on 15 or 30-inch rows. You know, how much root proliferation do you really get if we've got 60% of our fertilizer in the middles? Okay, how do we maximize that? So anytime you can ban fertilizer, I think it just makes sense. And that's a good approach for sure. And then making foliar applications. Making foliar applications throughout the year to help, as you see, there's deficiencies in a tissue sample. You know, obviously that's a great way to do it as well.
Now, I remember at the field day, there were a number of people that came up to me and said, man, Randy's putting on several applications of boron in his crops, and isn't there such a thing as boron toxicity? Now, I think about this, and I'm like, you know, if anybody's going to see it, it would probably be Randy, because his soils are really, really light. Do you see boron being a toxic nutrient, or are you kind of careful on the rates enough?
Well, between me and David, we do apply a lot of boron, for sure, and you know, I've always heard of it. I've always heard people talk about them needing to be aware of it and be cognizant of the risk, but I've never seen it. I mean, I had an employee once take and not follow instructions. I think everybody listening probably can relate to that. Sometimes employees don't listen and do what you ask them to do.
Oh, or brothers, Randy. Brothers don't listen all the time either.
But we were going to put on some boron and do it through the pivot, and I tell them X amount of gallons to put out. I go and put it out. We get to looking back at it, and we put like 6X what I told them. And I said, oh, Jesus. And this was like, you know, R4 on corn. And I said, I have just put almost 6 elemental pounds through the pivot. I said, I am going to kill it. I'm going to kill them first. But I am going to kill this corn. There's no way they can cut out 6 pounds and, you know, not have a disaster. I did not see boron toxicity, and I did not kill the plant. But I tell you what I did do. The boron levels went up significantly in the plant.
So, well, I would hope so. Wow, yeah, that's in the fourth quarter of the corn growing season too, to have a mistake like that is pretty nerve-wracking. Now, let's just take this though. You said R4, so you are applying it late in the season, and I know a lot of times I've heard you talk about filling that ear out to the end. Is this one of those components that you need?
I lost you.
Oh,
are you there?
Yes. You said you were at R4 when you were putting out that boron, and I think about how you always talk about filling that ear out to the end and not aborting any of those kernels. We saw a lot of tip back this year. Do you think boron is a big piece of that?
I think it can be, sure. I'm not a plant physiologist, but when you look at the role of boron in a plant, seed development, nutrient movement through the plant, et cetera, I definitely know that, there's different things that are playing a role as to why we keep those kernels and we may lose them. And, you know, we always on beans and peanuts and cotton in this area and corn, we understand that we need boron for that seed development and or that fruit development. So I definitely think it definitely could be a cause and effect. When boron gets low, then obviously we have some abortion, and that's not what we're after.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's what you need when you're raising the kind of yields that you are, Randy. With, you know, corn, you've been over 500 bushels in the past. Really looking forward to seeing what your crop turns out like this year. And you look, of course, at the soybeans with the world record again, 190 bushel soybeans. Really, really impressive, Randy. Thank you so much. Really appreciate your time today. I know you're a super busy guy, and you've been very generous with us once again.
Okay, no problem. And good luck to everybody with harvest. Take care.
You bet. Thank you very much. We're talking about boron on our show today. We'd love to hear from you as well. You can give us a call at 844-44-AG-PHD. We'll be right back.
Find your full potential and increase your bottom line with branded generic pesticides from Atticus, LLC. Atticus offers a vast portfolio of branded generic fungicides, herbicides, and insecticides for row crops. Atticus puts grassroots experience and common sense logic to work to make product selection easier and on your terms. Growers across the region count on Atticus for relevant and reliable products that deliver results every time. Ask your local retailer about Atticus products and visit atticusllc.com to learn more. For value-based solutions you can trust, turn to Atticus. Always read and follow label instructions.
If your fertilizers aren't formulated to maximize your efficiency, if you can't mix all the PK and micros your crop needs into one prescription application, if you have to add products to improve and invigorate your soil biology, then you need to expect more from your fertilizer. With AgroLiquid's advanced technology, you can expect more, a lot more. Make the most of your crop nutrition. With AgroLiquid, to find a crop nutrition expert near you, visit agroliquid.com.
If you're like most farmers, you start thinking about next year's herbicide program right now. And the first step to a clean start next spring is applying Authority MTZ-DF herbicide this fall. Nothing burns down tough winter annuals, including common chickweed, henbit, and mare's tail, like a tank mix containing Authority MTZ-DF herbicide. Talk to your FMC Star retailer about Authority MTZ-DF herbicide, or visit fmcauthority.com. Always read and follow label directions. Authority is not registered for sale or use in California.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Vellum is Rotam North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Vellum. For more information, visit vellumherbicide.com. That's Bellum herbicide.com.
For generations, your family has given their all to create a farming legacy. The fields now in your care are a heavy responsibility to sustain. You can't control when or how rain falls, but you can ensure your fields remain productive by taking water drainage into your own hands with the SoilMax Gold Digger Tile Plow. SoilMax Tile Plows bring a quick return in dollars, but no ROI is greater than a family's farming future. Let SoilMax ensure your greatest investment continues. Visit SoilMax.com to learn more.
Avoid the V-shaped pattern of injury caused by chemical buildup in your booms. The Express End Cap from Hypro eliminates the dead ends that lead to herbicide buildup and provides easy access to your booms, giving a complete flush between applications. Hypro, helping you spray better.
The last thing you want after harvesting your grain is to spoil it before it goes to market. The Grain Temp Guard from Farm Shop MFG is a low-cost bin monitoring solution that tracks temperature and humidity and alerts you when conditions exceed safe thresholds. Visit farmshopmfg.com.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio. Brian Hefty here live in the Morton studio. Today on our show, we are talking about boron, and next on, we've got Tim Dukert. He is with AgriLiquid. Tim, how are you today?
I'm doing well. Thanks for asking.
All right, so we're talking about boron here. What do you find with your farmers and agronomists that you work with? Is more of the boron sprayed foliar, or do you have more boron put on at planting time or ahead?
I think we have most of our boron applications going on at planting time. Putting on a micronutrient package is pretty standard across much of our area we cover. But I think we are seeing more and more applications of the foliar going on because people are being aware of the need for that boron, and the boron's not movable in the plant, so we always need some available. And I think the guys are realizing that and making those foliar applications to help make it available where it's most needed in the plant at the different stages.
Okay, so talking about that at plant application, Darren was talking earlier in the show just about boron toxicity. I have to assume you get some questions about that as well. Are people really worried about the boron toxicity at planting time? And if so, how do you help alleviate their fears?
We've seen a few cases of too much boron being applied. It's usually some problem happened, whether that was a mechanical pump failure,
sure.
Rates got put on too high, you know, too much micronutrients got applied in the mix.
Yep.
Those mistakes that happen all the time, as you know of, or could happen every once in a while. But, you know, the white corn syndrome can happen, and I've seen it out there, but generally, putting on at planting time, it's not an issue. Boron toxicity. I think most guys, most cases, know what's needed and the right amount to put on at planting time and what's needed for the plant.
Yeah, I find very few farmers that just want to spend money willy-nilly on a whole bunch of stuff. It's usually dialed in fairly well. And yes, there could be the occasional problem, but I'm with you. You know, I've been an agronomist now for 30 years, and I don't know, honestly, that I've ever looked at a severe boron over application. So yes, occasionally we'll get a little too much on, but a lot of the soils I deal with within 500 miles here have plenty of calcium, pretty heavy soils, and it's pretty rare that we have any issues like that. All right, so what else do you talk to guys about when it comes to boron?
Like I said earlier, that new idea, getting boron out there multiple times during the season can be beneficial. Making sure that we're hitting those reproductive stages hard, because I do think, you know, number one, setting up the plant that we set flowers and then fill out those kernels. Boron and potassium interact quite a bit, so you know, it's important to have the boron there for the potassium uptake, and potassium is important in the kernel set and filling of those kernels on a corn plant, especially also.
All right, any last comments you got for us today on boron, Tim?
Well, usually we think of corn and sugar beets, alfalfa and, or we think of corn and soybeans, sorry. Alfalfa and sugar beets are very responsive to boron, and keep in mind of making applications in those crops. It is very important in both of those.
Yeah, I agree. Actually, if you go to, I mean, for anybody listening today, if you go to the AgPHD fertilizer removal app, for most crops, we have how much boron is required by that crop. Now, granted, it's not a lot. I mean, in total, what the grain's going to remove and what the stover is going to remove between those two things, I mean, in some cases, it might only be a tenth of a pound per acre per year. But the point is, if you don't have at least some boron out there, the boron that you need, you're not going to get the yield and not going to get the quality you're after. Well, again, we've been talking to Tim Dukert with AgriLiquid. Tim, thanks for the time today. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
You bet. All right, next we got Jeff calling in from down in Arkansas. Hi, Jeff. How are you?
Pretty good. How are you guys?
Doing great. I hear you got a question about boron and your wheat crop.
Yep. We're putting our fertility program together for our winter wheat.
Okay.
And pulled up your handy dandy app today, and
yep.
Seen that I'm looking at about 3/4 of a pound of boron per acre. And
what's your yield goal?
Well, my yield goes a lot more. My yield goal this year is going to be 60.
60. Okay.
So.
All right.
Which is high for us.
Okay, but let's go back to, you were saying 3/4 of a pound of what?
Boron.
Because when I punch in 60 bushel winter wheat, grand total, it needs about 9/100 of a pound. So about 1/10 of a pound per acre is all.
Hang on, I must have done something wrong.
Were you on the metric system, Jeff?
Oh, I'm on standard, and it said 0.67 is what I got. Okay, so excuse me, I didn't have my glasses on.
Hey, it happens to me too. So
timing on that. Yeah.
Okay, timing
on application.
Okay. What? Tell me about your soil. What's your? How heavy is your soil?
Gumbo, heavy.
Yep. Okay. So if you would like to, you can put some boron on in advance of planting. So like on our farm, for example, on heavy ground, we'll broadcast boron out there, and we might put even a full pound out there because we have poor soil test levels. Okay, we might even put more than a pound out there if we had really poor soil test levels. But anyway, we're doing that to kind of build up the soil. All right. So what we were just talking about with Tim Dukert is he was talking about planting time applications. And a lot of times people will do that banded on corn and soybeans. Well, on wheat, you can't really do that so much. So our advice is either broadcast some in advance, or if you would like to, you can certainly run foliar, but you don't need a whole lot of boron. So usually guys are going with some little micro blend. It might contain boron and copper and zinc or something, but you know, a lot of times they're doing that foliar. Now, the whole thing is with any nutrient, we want to make sure that we've got an ample amount as we progress through the season. But with boron, it's most important as we get near flowering. So we aren't maybe as concerned about it day one as we are, you know, when we get toward that heading kind of timing. So if it was me, I would do one of two things. What we do on our farm, I prefer to get it out early. So I would go broadcast some. If you don't want to do that and you want to go foliar, then I would do that just before heading.
Just before heading.
That's probably
okay,
what I would do.
Not broadcast. Okay. What about broadcasting in the second? Right now I do two nitrogen shots.
Okay.
We do a fall nitrogen shot and a spring nitrogen shot.
Yep.
Would it be okay to put it in when we're doing the spring nitrogen shot that is in growth stage before, or do we need to? I've been contemplating putting a third nitrogen shot out there right at heading.
Yeah.
And to try to build up protein. And so maybe that would be the timing to do it then, is when we put that third shot out and maybe put some foliar out there at the
around the same time.
Yeah. Honestly, if it was me, I might do just a little bit at that second timing and just a little bit at that third timing. We got to be careful with the rates. We can't put on real big rates, but I mean, you certainly can use some. And so, yeah, it's right kind of in that timing where we have to do it. The other thing with boron is it's not very mobile in that plant. So, in other words, if your lower leaves, your first tissue is super short, it doesn't easily move to the rest of the plant. Whereas like nitrogen and potassium and phosphorus, if your plant is short, heck, it'll just rob it from the stalk. It'll rob it from the lower leaves. Doesn't care. It doesn't work exactly that way with micronutrients. So then we've got to have either an ample amount in the soil when the plant needs it, or it's got to be toward the upper part of the plant when that plant needs it. So yes, I would time that a little later. Otherwise, like I say, you could certainly do some right now before you seed. Well, hey, Jeff, we got to run, but thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
All right, we are going to get to the Ag PhD mailbag coming up right after this. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio.
Every farmer knows there are lots of steps to having a perfect season. Don't let your fertilizer plan be the step that trips you up. For over 35 years, AgroLiquid has had the experts and the products that'll help you move closer to your target. No matter when you apply fertilizer, no matter how, you'll hit the bullseye. AgroLiquid can help you increase yields and crop quality. To learn more, go to agroliquid.com. AgroLiquid moves you closer to your target.
When it comes to my weed control, I know a head start can go a long way. That's why I spray early, so I can keep control all season long with a Roundup Ready Extend crop system, the system that makes the difference. This is my field.
Choose the Roundup Ready Extend crop system for control of more weeds than any other soybean system. Featuring Extendamax herbicide with vapor grip technology to manage tough-to-control weeds, including up to 14 days of soil activity, along with the field-proven performance of Roundup Ready to Extend soybeans. Now you have the right tools to extend your weed control and extend your yield with the system that makes the difference. Learn how you can put the system to work in your field when you visit RoundupReadyExtend.com. Extendamax is a restricted-use pesticide. Performance may vary. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions. Check local regulations for specific requirements in your state.
Customer service goes a long way when trying something new. Ryan Shaw from Michigan shares how Soil Warrior helped him transition to strip tillage in his operation.
The Soil Warrior guys, they are amazing to work with. They made this jump in this transition extremely painless. One question that I get all the time is, how is the service and everything? And I said, well, actually, I get better service from them than I typically do my dealers uptown. They're just amazing.
More info at soilwarrior.com.
Every farmer knows that in order to be profitable, you need to maximize the return on your crop input investments. Hi, I'm Scott Harms, an agri-risk specialist with Grain PhD. Without an effective and flexible strategy, your grain marketing plan gets stuck in the mud. With Grain PhD, you get the clarity and guidance a solid marketing plan needs. Our free Grain Bridge software simplifies your cost-profit analysis, and our risk specialists are here to help you develop your plan. Sign up today at grainphd.com.
Your independent spirit is more rewarding than ever before. Unlike programs that require growers to purchase a particular seed brand or to bundle certain products, the FMC Freedom Pass program rewards you for making the best choices for your fields. Our exclusive agronomic rewards, performance assurances, application innovations, and product financing make it easier to protect your crops and cash flow. Visit your authorized FMC retailer or FMCFreedomPass.com to calculate your potential financial incentive and learn more.
Thanks for listening today to Ag PhD Radio. If you've got a question, just send me an email, radio@agphd.com. Gotten a lot of great questions today. So and some comments, too. This one comes from Matt in Illinois, and he sent this in, and this is actually for the state of Indiana, that apparently there's a new noxious weed seed rule in Indiana. He wanted to make us aware of this, that they have now added the amaranth species, looks like Palmer amaranth and water hemp, are now on the noxious weed list. And I thought it was interesting. They crossed off Russian knapweed. And I just remember when I was a kid, or in high school, I guess, in FFA, we had to learn how to identify Russian knapweed. And we talked about Russian knapweed some. And well, now it's off the noxious weed list in Indiana. So apparently people are doing a good job controlling that out there. Anyway, thanks for the information, Matt. Appreciate that. Next one is from Brendan. He's an agronomist down in Nebraska, and he said, hey, in my area, we've got this 3.4 maturity bean that's doing really well, but a lot of guys don't want to plant a bean that late. How can I talk more people into planting a late bean? Well, look, Brendan, I am a big believer in spreading my maturity risk for both corn and soybeans. And so if in all your trial work, if this 3.4 bean is doing well and you can normally in your area raise a 3.4, I would at least talk to your farmers about, hey, maybe you want to at least try one field of this. You don't ever want to get too carried away on the late stuff. And the reason why is, especially with beans, you can end up with green beans in the fall. So you got to be a little bit careful about that. But ultimately, farmers are after yield. Yield makes money. So the reason why I like planting late beans is typically they yield a little bit more than the early beans. But again, you got to kind of spread that risk. And so I have the same type of plan, the same philosophy with both corn and soybeans, that the first thing we're going to put in the ground is basically on our late end of the maturity list. And then we kind of keep working down in the maturities as we go. So we rarely have to switch to earlier stuff versus the plan, because the plan is always that, look, I can't plant everything in one day. It's going to take me 2-3 weeks a lot of times, maybe even 4 weeks, depending on weather, to get stuff planted. So I'll always start late and then finish with the early beans, or start with a late maturity and then finish with an early maturing bean. And that's probably the direction that I would talk to your farmers about too. Just, hey, if you can plant early, maybe plant a field or two of the late maturing bean if that one is yielding so much better than the earlier ones. All right, next one, I don't have a name on this, but they were commenting on, we had just done a weed of the week as white clover, and they said, I replaced my grass with clover. Yep, you know, we get a lot of comments about this, that sometimes the weed that we feature as our weed of the week on Ag PhD TV might actually be a crop for someone. I mean, let's face it, we talk about how to kill corn, volunteer corn. We talk about how to kill volunteer soybeans, volunteer canola, volunteer trees. Clovers, we talk about how to kill. I mean, the thing is with a weed, you got to remember this. Anything, literally everything is a weed when it's in the wrong place. So you will get the maximum production out of a crop when that's the only crop you're raising. So I can't maximize my corn yield if I also have some beans growing out there, or vice versa. So, yep, I understand. We were talking about how to kill clover that day. We also occasionally talk about how to raise the best clover possible. So we go in both directions. All right. Let's see. Next one is from Jonathan. He says, I've got a question. I have two fields this year that ended up being prevent plant. Now, one was corn stalks from last year, and the other one was bean stubble. July 25th, I planted spring wheat as a cover crop, which grew very well. So for next year, I want to plant both fields to corn. Do I need to use a Smart Stacks or other corn rootworm product for protection? All right. So, Jonathan, I would just tell you, most likely you do not need that Smart Stacks out there. Now, you certainly can if you want to. It's not going to hurt. But especially where it's been soybeans, I mean, literally, you've been 3 years probably now since it was last corn. I seriously doubt you're going to have a major rootworm problem there. And let's hope in that other field, at least you got some benefit that maybe the rootworms drowned out. So I would hope there was better mortality of the rootworms where you did have this prevent plant anyway. So if it's me, I might go VT double. But I am not going to go Smart Stacks. I would probably still use some insecticide because, let's face it, you might have some other insects, some more secondary pests after this prevent plant issue, but I really doubt you're going to have a major rootworm problem. The other thing that I will tell you is I'm super happy that you got something out there as a cover crop, because if you hadn't have done that, I would have really worried about fallow syndrome next year with your corn. But since you got that cover crop out, then I think you should be in pretty good shape. I would just tell you, I would worry about how much nitrogen is there. Normally, you're going to use a certain amount of N. I would say because you had prevent plant, Then you had the spring wheat. We've lost a lot of the N that's naturally normally in that soil. I'd be worried about overall nitrogen, and I might be bumping my nitrogen rate compared to normal. All right, next one is from Carmela in Florida, who asks, do you have an app that highlights commercial sod? Carmela, no, we don't have anything specifically for sod and your sod farm there in Florida, other than it depends on the type of grass. If you go to the Ag PhD fertilizer removal app, we do have a number of grasses in there, and it talks about how much, or it tells you how much in terms of total nutrients you need. Other than that, I mean, we've got our Ag PhD field guide app where we talk about certain weeds and identification. We've got a lot of different apps, but yeah, most of them do pertain to corn and soybeans. Then we've got that nutrient removal one. We do have a drain tile calculator that I doubt is going to impact you, but it possibly could. I think we've got about 10 different apps now that you could certainly check out. All right. Next one is from, Gentry, who asks, how does calcium affect nitrogen fixation? Well, Gentry, I would say calcium tied together with nitrogen fixation, usually that's not like the first thing that I'm concerned about is calcium levels when it comes to nitrogen fixation. But I'll tell you two reasons why you want to have good levels of calcium in your soil and how it possibly can impact this. Number one is this. When you have good calcium levels in the soil compared to magnesium, you're going to have more oxygen in that soil, because calcium is a bigger molecule compared to the magnesium. And so you'll have more pore space in the soil. That's a good thing, because for nitrogen fixation to happen, those bacteria need oxygen. They need air. The more air they have, they need the oxygen to live. They need the nitrogen to take it and convert it over to nitrogen that the plant can use. Well, if there's no air in that soil, there's no oxygen for them. There's no nitrogen for the plant. So that's not good. The next thing is, with a plant that has good levels of calcium inside, it is just flat out more healthy, and most likely it's going to be able to produce a little more sugar for the bacteria, which in turn means they work harder and faster at producing more nitrogen for the plant. So your overall nitrogen efficiency will typically go up if you have good calcium levels in the plant and in the soil. All right, next one comes from Tom. And I believe he's out in Illinois. I do get some emails from time to time from Tom. But anyway, I know he's from here in the Midwestern United States somewhere. Anyway, we were talking the other day about how to control bamboo, and I had said glyphosate. He said, how about arsenal? Have you tried arsenal? Well, look, could arsenal work on bamboo? Yes. Arsenal, when you think about arsenal, think about a product similar to like Pursuit. Now, it's going to be more harsh. It's going to basically kill everything, kill the soil, at least for just a little bit. We have used this ourselves, had people use arsenal over the years. My concern, number one, is where is this getting used? Because I don't want it to last super long in the soil. Now, a lot of these ALS products like Pursuit and Arsenal are going to last a little longer in low pH soils. It's unlike a lot of the herbicides we have that last longer in high pH soils. So I'm much more concerned if I've got a low soil pH. Speaking of low soil pH, Pierre sent an email. We were talking about phosphorus management, and he said, make sure you mention that phosphorus does get tied up in the soil when pH is too low. Yes, Pierre, I agree 100% when pH is low, like especially below 5, we got a real problem with tie-up. We also have a real problem when that pH gets above 7.5 or 8. Anyway, Pierre just said here, some phosphorus fertilizer is protected to prevent this issue of tie-up and make the phosphorus more available to the plant, but is that effective or is it just marketing from the fertilizer company? Well, look, we've done some research on this. We have found some advantage to products like Avail, for example. We did see better phosphorus availability and less tie-up, and our pH wasn't all that off. A lot of our nutrients weren't all that off, so I was surprised that it worked well, but I would just say the same thing I always say to people that ask questions like this. Try some on your farm. See if it works for you in your soil type and your situation. But yeah, in a lot of cases, there absolutely is some merit to these products that are put on phosphorus. All right, well, before we go, just want to say thanks to our production staff. My sister Janelle was running the controls today, and thanks to you for listening. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.